Hey, welcome to another episode of Advice for Lovers podcast. So have you been in a relationship with someone who is sensitive or too sensitive? Do you know people like that? It's funny that sensitivity, while it can be a really good thing, it seems like that whole adjective is now a criticism or a badge of shame for people. So today we want to talk about sensitivity. Is it a bad thing? Is it a good thing? And what does it really mean to be too sensitive? Stay tuned for another exciting adventure of the Advice for Lovers podcast.
And welcome back to Advice for Lovers podcast. I'm Jenny McDaniel, relationship coach, and with me I have Drew Pillow, relationship counselor. How you doing, Drew?
I'm doing good, Jenny. How about you?
Doing pretty good. We've been working on and off together in podcasts for 10 years. In this particular show, we go into the big and subtle issues in relationships. So we can go anywhere from looking at cheating and can one get past that, all the way to he won't pick up his socks. So we cover all kinds of issues here, and we're glad you're here with us.
It's our job to pick up the socks, guys. We know that. Today we're going to talk about sensitivity, you know, and just the whole stigma associated with sensitivity. I've heard people say, oh, she's sensitive or he's sensitive, but as if that was a bad thing. Sensitivity is not always a bad thing. Sensitivity in a relationship. Let's say I'm in a relationship and I'm a sensitive person. That can be a good thing in some ways, right, Jenny?
Absolutely. When someone is sensitive, they are often empathetic. And in relationships, you want somebody to be empathetic, at least some of the times, to your emotions and to your feelings. So overall, yeah, that's what you're looking for.
Because it seems like the opposite of sensitivity would be insensitive. Somebody who's just not even caring about your feelings, not considerate, you know, and we want someone who listens, who cares, and who's, you know, connecting with our wants and needs. So sensitivity is good, but sometimes it's not good. And today we're going to talk about when it's in that area where it could present challenges in the relationship. We're going to, instead of saying sensitive people, we're going to call them people with high sensitivity, a politically correct term. So people with high sensitivity tend to have certain characteristics, and we're going to look at some of the more or the less positive ones. Like they often think, and this came from a website called, I don't know what it's called, but they often think or worry about what others are thinking. They tend to take things personally, and they are afraid of rejection, even in minor situations. Does that sound bad? Jenny?
Yeah. If you have a partner that is sensitive, that's fantastic. Their empathy is usually high. They can often be in touch with your feelings and your sensations. But I do think that sensitive people have a pattern of taking things too personally. So it's great to have a partner that's empathetic, but if you have a partner who can't even take one criticism so that you can make your relationship better, then no, that could be categorized as too sensitive. A lot of people throw around too sensitive a lot because they're not willing to deal with any sensitivity. Because if a partner is feeling sensitive, then that other partner often has to open up their space and hold space for that person and have at least look for a few minutes with them. I like the phrase too sensitive, but it also has it's a double-edged sword because people can be too sensitive, meaning their boundaries aren't good or they take things too personally, which makes it impossible to have a conversation and go back and forth and get better at things. But sometimes people say too sensitive and it's just simply a deflection so that they don't have to hold space for their partner or they don't want to or they don't like to.
Yes.
So it's good and bad side there.
Literally in this article, it says a reader wrote to me recently that being a highly sensitive person is both a blessing and a curse. Mm-hmm. So spot on with that. And the part where people use the term too sensitive is like a weapon to kind of shut your partner down. Like, mm-hmm. it's a microaggression, because now the person's wondering, am I being too sensitive? Am I tripping? Or is this real? You know? So yeah, it's got a negative stigma, and it's being misused when, you know, it's actually a reality for some people. I don't know if people really set out to be this way. Maybe they just are. But here's some of the other negative attributes associated with highly sensitive people. They often have negative expectations. For example, oh, they won't like me. They often experience negative emotions like stress and anxiety when interacting with others. They get triggered and have a difficult time letting things go. They feel hurt and disappointed easily, compare themselves with others in physical relations, social, financial scenarios, and they feel unhappy from the negative comparisons. They hide their negative feelings because they feel like they'd be embarrassed to show that. They often discuss their negative emotions with people. Seems like there's a lot of drama in their lives. They have a hard time accepting critical feedback, constructive feedback. They feel like people are judgmental. They overreact to perceived provocations. They feel awkward in group settings, and they feel self-conscious romantically in intimate situations. They worry about their partner's approval or being afraid of being judged. So it seems like that's the entire list. And that kind of paints a picture. That kind of paints a picture of a person. To me, it seems like this person is going to be really stifled in expressing themselves. And they have a real high likelihood of being super dishonest because they're trying to present in a certain way. They're trying to hide all this internal negativity and trying to really put on this happy face. Like, I'm not fucked up, you know? What do you think?
Yeah, I think that I agree with some of the list. I mean, I don't necessarily think it's all correct or what have you. I'll say that, yeah, it's mostly right. But I like their view. I like hearing it from other people's angles. I think that not all sensitive people are insecure. So that list kind of makes it sound like if someone's sensitive, they're insecure about what their partner thinks about them, what their world thinks about them, which can be true. Absolutely. And that's where, you know, I like the list for the most part. But I also think that sensitive people can be wildly confident. They're just incredibly sensitive. For example, as a professional psychic, I know there's all different kinds of psychics out there. One being clairsentient, which means clear senses. So you can have a very evolved type person, for example, a psychic, maybe, not that they're all evolved, but let's call it an evolved psychic, who walks, every time they walk in a crowded space, they're so psychic and clairsensitive that they can't get past all the energies in the room to function in that space to do whatever they're doing there, if it's a lecture, yeah, or whatever. So I think that you can have confidence and just be highly sensitive and being honest with yourself and noticing you are sensitive and working with it. That's everything.
Yeah. And hence the word too, because it speaks to, you know, having this, just being over the top with it, you know, like, he's loving. Oh, he's too loving. You know, then it speaks to, like, you know, almost like obsessive, possessive, or he's a strict parent, but he can be too strict. I mean, you know, exceeding the boundaries of what's quote unquote normal or healthy. So when the sensitivity meter is way past, you know, into the red zone, then it can present some of these challenges. And when you care so much, like you said, insecure, when you need other people's approval so badly, then it starts to create all kinds of issues. And of course, I agree with you. This is not across the board. This is just some person's list of tendencies. So this is something to look out for if you're dating someone who's highly sensitive. And who's even the one that judges people? Is there a high sensitivity test? Or I don't know.
Who says the too? Because too is relative, the T-O-O. It's too much of anything might be not enough for somebody else. So it's relative.
Yes. Yes, that is true. So put the asterisk on all this, because there's going to be the exceptions and there's going to be the rules. And this is just an article that we're kind of exploring and examining. So let's go into the, this is another article, and it talks about the three biggest relationship challenges for highly sensitive people. So you're a highly sensitive person, according to whomever put the label on you, and now you're in a relationship. And here's the challenges that tend to arise. So highly sensitive people tend to have unhealthy boundaries. Basically, they care and give and are so compassionate with others that they kind of lose themselves in the relationship. You know, they're so busy caring about what you want and what you need and what you feel. And they just are so into you that at some point they don't take the time to really care about what they want and what they need and what they feel, especially if it's not in alignment with their partners. How's that sound to you?
Yeah, that is absolutely a thing. And the boundaries is, this is an important thing to talk about with this subject and topic. Because what happens if somebody has bad boundaries? For example, they make everything about you and you're going to be the apple of their eye, and they are so concerned about you that they forget about themselves. Well, it might feel nice to be doted upon like that, but now what you're going to have is more of a child than a partner, someone that's attached to you and your energy, as opposed to having their own individualism or what have you, and going after things that they want. Some people are looking for that kind of, you know, exceptionally codependent people are going to look for a partner that has that high sensitivity and makes you everything because they need that. Maybe it'll work out, but all of them should be working on their emotions, no doubt, because these are dysfunctions, I would call them. But the thing I'd like to talk about is someone who has bad boundaries and makes you everything and loses their identity. They also usually have bad boundaries with other people because they're so used to bending over backwards for their loved ones. They're now expecting you to, because they don't know where the line is, and they don't know where the line is for their healthy approach to you. For example, if you have somebody that's made, if you have somebody that's a mother and she's made her family everything and made it number one, number one, number one. Well, when she gets to be at an age where she might need more help, she's going to expect those kids to do the same thing she did for them, which they might, but they're not obligated. It'd be nice to help out and what have you, but they don't have to change and bend their boundaries because you had bad boundaries. So it's all fun and games to have someone that wants to make you everything. Just know that they're going to have bad boundaries with you at some point and expect you now to be a doormat for them in some situation. Mm-hmm. So everyone just needs to check their boundaries.
Yeah, definitely. yeah, it's just unrealistic. It's unrealistic, especially if you give something and you expect people to give that back to you. Mm-hmm. Like, hey, I sacrificed my whole life for you, and now it's your turn to do it for me. Well, who said that they want to do that kind of?
Exactly.
They may not be that kind of person. So
exactly.
And the solution to that is establish healthy boundaries. Okay, on to number two. That's what this article says. Like, oh, duh. And it involves taking, you know, having some me time, taking time to get to know you and what you want, and, you know, having the courage to walk your own path. Partners aren't Siamese twins. They're just people kind of sharing lives a little bit or a lot, and being individuals in the process, I think. Challenge two is so funny because you mentioned this in the last thing you said. Challenge two is people that are highly sensitive in relationships, they end up playing the parent instead of the partner. So basically what this says is that they're taking on the role of caretaker. They're seen as a healing presence in the lives of others and nurturers, but this creates an imbalance and an unhealthy power dynamic, because you put the other person's needs first, to the detriment of your own. So, you know, I'm trying to cater to you so much that I'm neglecting me, and I'm actually doing things that are not healthy at all for me because I'm trying to take care of you. So what do you think about that one?
Yeah, it could go both ways. For example, if you have a highly sensitive person in the relationship, they could be so highly sensitive that now they're arrested, developed in their other parts of their life, and you have to care for them. You have to make sure the bills are paid. They may cook you six meals a day, but you know, their aptitude to potentially go take care of themselves in the world, it might not be there. And so you have to be realistic. Do I want somebody who doesn't participate in paying the bills and just, you know, takes care of the home? I don't say just, it's a lot, but you know, if there's no kids there, how much do you have to clean? You know, so, you know, never it's at work and what have you, clean once a week or whatever. But nonetheless, you have to be conscious of what you do and don't want. Do you want someone to participate in paying the bills, and or do you want someone to take care of the home? Because you just got to be realistic with yourself. But then also the person that's highly sensitive and functional, so doesn't have that arrested development, might become the parent and parent a full-grown other person and enable them from learning life skills. Like exactly. You'll get, often get a seven-year-old man who's never turned on a dishwasher in his life, never done yep. a dish.
Yep.
That's
yep.
not healthy. Yes. These are living skills.
Exactly. It totally, I'm looking at the next, I'm looking at the paragraph that explains this a little bit, and it says, you're teaching your partner, you can also teach your partner to over-rely on you for survival. Mm-hmm. So now this person doesn't get the experiences that they need to be functional themselves. So it can be, you know, just toxic in on both ends. So I think one of the challenges, the solution is to connect your own feelings daily. Easier said than done. Because if you're wired to just not focus on yourself, then when you stop to take time to focus on yourself, you don't even know what to look for. You don't know what feels right and what doesn't feel right because you haven't been taking your pulse to even know. You haven't sat down, and literally I had to do this. I woke up one day as an adult, and I really didn't know what I liked and disliked because I was so accustomed to being in a relationship where everything needed to be approved of. Hey, should we go out tonight? Oh, I don't think we should. Okay, we should. You know, trying to be the good, sensitive partner, but not understanding boundaries and not having guidance to be healthy as a healthy individual. Because I, like so many other people, thought that we are a team, and what's good for the team, like the team comes first. I'm nobody. It's all about the team. But growing up, becoming more educated, I understand that the individuals are the team. Like healthy, it takes healthy individuals to make a healthy team. So I have to know what it is that I want, don't want, like, dislike, where I'm trying to go, what my goals are. And so having done a lot of work to become self-aware and become sensitive to my needs, to know when I'm going way out of my out in left field and neglecting myself, then I can reel myself in. But people who don't have a clue don't have a clue. You can't just say, oh, suck it up and pay attention to yourself. Does that make sense?
It does.
Yeah. So start the process, you know, get some coaching, get some counseling, get some healing so that you can connect to your own self, which seems to be real common sense and easy, but for some people, it's really not. Challenge number three is, and these are the challenges that arise when you're in a relationship with a highly sensitive person. Challenge number three says, it's called dimming your sensitivity. It says sensitive souls often feel misunderstood, and they have a deep desire to belong. So with that heightened sensitivity, sometimes they can shift into people pleasing and not asking for what they need, and shape shifting in relationships to be what seems to be correct. So they just want to be correct and approved of. And so over time, they tend to push down and shrink their authentic selves in order to be approved of and, you know, to do the right thing, quote unquote, in a relationship. And at some point they'd be unclear, they become unclear what's true for them and what's not. So, and they say in worst case scenarios, this can lead to sensitive people to create relationships with highly narcissistic, manipulative, and abusive partners. So that's a lot to unpack. What do you get out of that, if anything?
Well, there's tons of articles about this exact thing all over the internet. If you ever want to read them, just Google the narcissist and the empath, or the empath and the narcissist. Mm-hmm. It's very common that an empath, a very highly sensitive person, would bring in a narcissist, someone who really does thrive off everyone praising them and glorifying them. So very commonly in our attempts to be highly sensitive, empathetic people, we will frequency in or manifest some lessons which are in the form of a narcissist. And the karmic lesson between the empath and the narcissist is many things, but one of which is what I've never seen happen, which is the narcissist become more reflective and heartful and come back out of that narcissism kind of energy. And the one that usually ends up happening is the empath has to draw a line and say, now I'm not a doormat anymore, and I refuse to be a doormat for somebody or an extension of somebody. So that's the lesson that the empath usually gets when they run across somebody like a narcissist is, I love you, but I love me more, and I'm not going to be a doormat. I'm not going to allow you to manipulate me or so on and so forth. They do a lot of different things.
Yeah, and it seems like they're both trapped.
Yes.
They're both trapped in this cycle. And I like this phrase that I made up myself, so it's not perfect, but and I was talking about family members, and I said some family members are assholes because mm-hmm. they just don't know any better. And then there's other family members who are assholes because they just don't know any better. So I believe that narcissists and empaths, we get caught in these roles because we just don't know any better. And we're not, sometimes we're not comfortable with taking a look at who we are and our practices and maybe discovering ways to improve. So we're kind of just stuck in this cycle. And that, you know, I believe the narcissist can possibly just be just as much a victim of his wiring as the empath is a victim of theirs. What do you think?
It's very interesting you brought that up, because I have read many articles on this topic, and one of which was about the narcissist and how a large percentage of narcissists were once empaths as children, but raised by narcissistic parents. So they became narcissistic by simply being so sensitive and open, and oftentimes sensitive and open people can be manipulated. That's why the narcissist will be attracted to them quite often, because they're just go with the flow type people quite often. So what you have is a child empath, very young, of course, 0, 1, 2, 3, being raised by a narcissist. They inadvertently pick up the narcissistic tendencies, because we all pick up our parents' tendencies, whether they're narcissists or not. That's what we know growing up. And then they become a narcissist. So I've read that you can be a narcissist by birth, you know, probably a lot like a sociopath or something of this nature, but they also, a big percentage of them were empaths once, but became narcissists through living experiences and what have you.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. So yeah, they're wired funny. There's just a weird wiring going on, psychological or maybe even chemical.
Yeah. And it's not a death sentence. It's not a final rubber stamp on your head. I mean, mm-hmm. everything can, there's healing available. There's healing yes. available. If it's a chemical situation, there's diet, there's medication.
Yeah. And meditation. Yeah.
And meditation. Mm-hmm. There's ways to heal, but you have to see something that needs to be healed before you're even interested in being healed, you know, because you can't fix something that's not broken. So another thing, when you were describing the relationship, it kind of took me to a place, and I'm curious to know if this makes sense or not, but it's almost like the narcissist is the guy with the water, and the empath is the guy that's walking across the desert, who's really, really needing water, who's thirsty. So here he is with all this water, all this approval, all these compliments and this praise to this person who really needs it. And they get sucked in. And now this person is so grateful that she came along and kind of rescued them. Now they just kind of lose themselves in this pursuit of maintaining this praise and this, you know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Or is that just like a terrible illustration?
Well, I think it can go both ways. I think that's a great illustration to explain both. So the empath wanting some water from the narcissist who's got all this water, that's exactly what narcissists do. They love bomb you. They put you on a pedestal. They put you real high up and you will fall. There is no doubt about that because they're unhealthy, the narcissist's mind. So yes, I like that. But then I can flip it the other way and say the narcissist is thirsty for the water the empath has, because we were talking about the empath or the sensitive having all this love and I'm going to make my life yours and you have all of me and I do everything for you because that's what a good person does. The narcissist loves that. They want to drink that and they will tap you and they will drink you dry. And then that's when the empath has to draw a line in the sand and say, okay, and no, this is imbalanced.
Yeah.
So I can see it both ways.
I like that. I like that. I appreciate that you clarifying that for me. And so once again, I just want to reemphasize that, you know, help is available, but it all starts with wanting help. And it's not to say that the stigma of, hey, get some help. It almost makes a person's ego will say, well, you're saying that I'm all messed up. No, not that you're all messed up or messed up at all. It's just that there's some qualities or some behaviors or perspectives that you might want to take a look at, and you can adjust to be even better. So have even more love and an even more fulfilling and healthy relationship. So it's not that you're broken. It's just that we can all improve. And it starts with understanding that something doesn't feel right. And there was something else I wanted to say, but I'm gonna stop right there so you can say something and then I can, maybe I'll just listen to what you say. I'll figure it out one day.
Yeah, this stigma around psychological health has got to go. And it has. I mean, they used to whisper under breath, Sally's getting some psychology back in the 50s, you know. Now it's less of a stigma, but there still is stigma associated with people getting help with their emotions or their mind or their chemicals or their hormones or their moods or what have you. So it's part of what I like to do with this show too, is we're just throwing information out there like it's every day, because it is every day. People need to reflect every day, or at least most days.
Yeah. And I mean, it's understanding that there's bodies, like we're made up of bodies. Let's use that term. Like there's your physical body. There's your inner energy body, right? Mm-hmm. There's your mental, there's your psychological body. So you can look in the mirror and say, oh, there's something unhealthy about my physical appearance. Let me go to the gym. Let me change my diet. But there's something going on with my emotional self or my emotional self. I should maybe go and get some direction on how to work on that. That's a no-no. That's taboo, you know, but it's like you said, we're getting better with that. Also, the other thing that I wanted to mention is that you can get in these quote unquote toxic relationships that almost fit like a glove. Like here I am. I am the empath, and here's this narcissist. And for a while, it feels like the perfect fit. So you feel like this is okay. And the drawbacks or the negative parts that come along with that, you feel like, hey, that's just par for the course. Nobody's relationship is perfect. So we can get in these mutually toxic and mutually acceptable toxic relationships and think we're okay now. Because something beats nothing. And that you kind of have to, I don't know. Have you heard of something like that? Does it make sense? And what's the solution to that type of thinking?
Well, I think we're not shown how to be in relationships first and foremost. We go out there at 18 years old, probably watching, even if our parents' relationship isn't failed, meaning divorce, it might have failed, meaning no divorce, but yet not functional. Yeah. So most people go out into the dating world not really understanding people and not understanding that there's a functionality and not understanding what to look for. So yeah, we all just need to take a step back, pan out, and look at what is functional. Because what happens in relationships when we run across somebody that we dig, we get all crazy. Oh, I love them. I'm infatuated. Mm-hmm. This is the one. Well, that's called chemistry, and that's a part of what makes a functioning relationship. Other parts are emotional intelligence. So it's not if we're going to have a problem, it's when and how we move through it. That's pretty yes. much the biggest ingredient, in my opinion. Yeah. Of course, the chemistry and similar desires, meaning if someone wants to never work and live homelessly, you know, that's fine, but the other partner is going to have to agree with that. And that's a big step. And, you know, so some level of similar lifestyle, doesn't have to be the exact, of course, but, you know, similar-esque in a house or not. No one's shown these ingredients. We're just thrown out there. And then we have to hash through not only figuring that out, but then figuring out our major malfunctions, because we all have them. Am I needy? Am I codependent?
Yeah.
Am I insecure? Likely those answers are yes, at least to one of those. Admitting, like you said, there's an issue. Taking a look at what that is, how we can unpack that, and then looking for a partner. We're always looking for partners when we're all jacked up in our heads. And I do it too. I'm not pointing fingers. I did it too. but it's not very helpful. I mean, it is helpful because you'll learn. But doing that internal work, or at least starting off with that, you're never going to be fully healed, you know? So just starting off with that, then trying to get into these relationships is so much more helpful, as opposed to just willy nilly throwing ourselves out there and learning as we go, which most of us had to do. Again, we didn't see it very commonly, didn't see a good functioning space at home.
Yeah. Poor role models. And I think another, I'm not going to say the media in general. I'm going to say music. I'm going to say that music taught me that, oh, you're my everything and everything is you. Like, oh my God, I want to have a relationship like that when I grow up. And you hear these songs that are really, you know, painting these romantic pictures of something that's totally not, it's not real. Like no one can be your everything. You have to be your own everything. And that person can be your partner. And they can mean a whole lot to you, but when they start to mean everything to the point where you lose who you are, it becomes toxic. I like what you said about knowing yourself and knowing what your shortcomings are and being open to working on that, those issues. And if you're not, and you're a little bit sensitive, when someone says, hey, you know what? You are insecure. Then it's going to hit you like a bag of bricks right in the face, and it's going to hurt and you're not going to like it. But if you already know yourself, then they're not blindsiding you with the truth. So I think this is pointing me toward an idea of a future show that talks about the business of a relationship. Mm-hmm. Beyond the chemistry, beyond the sexual wow, you know, what's the business end of the relationship, not financial per se, but just what does it take to sustain, to maintain something that's good? How do you go beyond the chemistry and the honeymoon phase?
We should call it the brass tacks of a relationship, or the business of relationships. I like that too.
Yeah, the brass tacks. Brass tacks, that sounds sexy. So, yeah. So I think, let's see, today, just to recap, today we talked about sensitivity. You know, is there such a thing as being too sensitive? Is sensitive a bad thing? You know, we throw that label on someone as a way to criticize them or to kind of, you know, push them away to be quiet and not point out things that we're doing that we shouldn't be doing. So I think we really dug deep and took a look at like how this plays out in relationships. I'm happy with the conversation that we had today. I think we helped a lot of people.
Yeah, I liked it. We always cover so much in the little time that we take to do these shows. And I love looking at this and being reflective and bouncing ideas off you. And I love it when you bounce ideas off me. It's been great.
Yeah, and definitely it is bouncing ideas, because we go into uncharted territory for me sometimes. And I like to be able to put it out there in the form of a question, because that I think that's healthy. That's how you open yourself up to learning. So even adults, even experienced in relationship dialogue, there's still room to grow for all of us. So don't be afraid to ask questions. In fact, visit us on our website, adviceforloverspodcast.com, where you can email us your questions, your comments, and we appreciate you. And without any further ado, anything more from you, Jenny?
Nope. We appreciate you. And until next time.
Peace.